Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Campbell. I'm a doula in Washoe County, Nevada, a Medicaid provider, a lactation educator, childbirth educator, and mom of 18. You can find me and connect on doulainreno.com. Remember, give a shout out to those who are brave enough to share their stories with us on how they have become parents. Let's dive in. Welcome to Becoming Parents Podcast. I'm the host, Jennifer Campbell. Today, I have Jamie Vaughn on a bonus episode, and we actually know each other.
We do.
Which is great.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It was so nice to meet you a few months ago.
I know. I loved it.
Yeah, me too. That was a really neat event.
It was. It was. We both had tabling events and I went around to everybody like, hi, I'm a doula and I want to know who you are. So thank you for being on. I want you to jump in and share the story, your story of becoming a parent.
Yeah, that was really weird because I was just having this conversation yesterday with someone on another podcast, Unapologetically Woman. And one of the things that I talked to her about was that I never wanted to be a mom.
All right.
I literally fell into being a mom because I fell in love with my three stepkids' dad. So I knew very early on, as far back as high school, maybe a little bit before that, that I never wanted to have kids myself. Like I didn't want to bear children. And so I caught a lot of flack for that over the years. And I, you know, had been with boyfriends with kids and, you know, thought about, you know, if I marry this guy, I'd be a step parent. And I was open to adoption, but I really didn't want to be a parent.
And why? So, was there a specific reason or you just really felt like it wasn't for you? You didn't want to put your body through it?
Yeah, all of that. Like seriously, all of that. I, first and foremost, I have, for whatever reason, I have this really weird intuition, deep intuition, and I've always had it. And it actually kind of scares me sometimes. And especially, you know, back in high school, when I was thinking to myself, I don't want to have kids because I didn't want them to be put through whatever it was that I saw into the future of our world, you know, things going on in our world. And the timing and the setting and time and all of that that I had in my mind was about this time in history that we're in right now. And it was kind of like, it was sort of blurred between 2000, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 through present day. And if you can, I mean, it's just really that true. That's what I saw. And I didn't know what was going to, you know, happen or anything. I just knew that it probably wasn't going to be good or something like that. And, you know, there's so many things going on in our world right now that it's like, I still am unsure. And of course, I have these three stepkids and I want to protect them. And I'm a grandma. So Glamma, they call me Glamma. But I also didn't want to put my body through it either.
I mean, it's a lot. It's so fascinating. My best friend from college, when I was pregnant my sixth time, called me up and said, I don't know how to tell you this, but Byron and I don't want to have kids. And I'm like, why would you call me worrying about what I would think or apologizing almost? Because she'd had so many awful conversations leading up to the one with me. Right. And I'm like, if you don't want to have kids, don't have them. I'm doing foster care. I'm taking in all these kids from parents who can't or didn't want or whatever the situation is, are struggling. Like, there's no reason for you to have kids if it's not what you want to do. And so, like, she didn't. They just knew they didn't want to. But there wasn't even a specific reason. They really, really loved their life. And they also saw a lot of people they knew divorcing after kids.
Right.
And so fascinating, just fascinating.
Yeah,
right. And she's not wrong.
Yeah.
And they're together.
Now,
so,
yeah. And I, you know, it's interesting because I want to be really clear that I love being a stepmom. I mean, our kids are all grown out of the house. Two of them have a daughter and we are dog parents, you know, primarily right now, but we have the kids. We all have a great relationship. It was a super duper bumpy ride throughout their adolescence and teenage, you know, the teenagers and stuff like that. But in the end, we all have a wonderful relationship. We love to travel together. We have family dinners together. And I even have a really good relationship with their mother. So,
oh, all right.
Yeah. And I mean, that was, it was very early on when I met my husband. The kids were like 4 going on 5, 5 going on 6. And then the oldest was 10. And so, you know, being a stepmom, that was really rough because I was the evil stepmother and I had a very different upbringing than they did. And so I kind of brought in my thoughts about parenting and tried to be really mindful that I wasn't their real mom, but at the same time, they were living under my roof the majority of the time because their mom worked, you know, swing shift. So she had them a couple days a week. We had them pretty much every night except for a couple. So I wanted to protect my space, you know, physically, mentally, all of that. My husband and I went rounds on a lot of things. There were things that I did not agree with that their mom would do, but we never as parents ever, ever badmouth. This is what pisses me off about couples that split up is that they badmouth each other in front of the kids. And we just never did that. I'm not sure about what their mom did. I really don't know, but in the end we do things together. She's always over. We invite her to, you know, to Thanksgiving, to family dinners. So we see her, at least a couple times a month and all together. So even though there were some things that were really difficult and we made it through, I love being a mom and I love being a glamma.
Yeah.
You know?
So, I mean, that's the best, right?
Yeah.
I'm a nanny, but glamma nanny, it doesn't matter. It's a joy. Yeah. How did it go when you guys met? Because the kids were pretty little, at least two of them were pretty young. We're a blended family too. And I know that my husband's ex-wife that like, she wouldn't have liked me no matter who I was.
Right.
And
there's that.
I think blending families and step parenting is the hardest thing you'll ever do. So how did you work towards, I know it's been years now, but through all that you worked towards like her coming to your house a couple times a month, being friends. You worked through the issues with your husband without killing each other. Talk to me about that. Did you have to kind of take a back seat to some of it and allow the parenting to that's what I did. I was like,
I
this is
to.
Not my decision. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I had to. It was really hard. I'm not going to lie. It was really hard. I honestly did not know if we were going to make it through. The nice thing about my husband is that when we're having issues, I'm not sure. When we're having issues, I apologize. Okay. We work it out. We go to counseling.
Okay.
He is one of those people who will go to counseling and
okay, you're good now.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. You just blanked out for just a minute. Yeah. You're good. You're good.
I am so sorry. We went to counseling. So if I said something like we need to do some counseling, he will do it. Right. So there's okay. not, it's not every day that a man will do that. I mean, I don't know about, I know women, like I've gone to counseling myself, therapy throughout the years on my own, whatever. But I said, we really need to sit down and be able to work through this with someone else. And so we've taken two of the kids to counseling. Two of them were absolute hellions and they didn't hide it. They, you know, they were very difficult and they hated me because of, I don't know, I would say the word hate, but it was very difficult for them because I'm, you know, watching things like sneaking out, doing things that they just weren't supposed to be doing. The other one was really good at hiding it. She was like, she knew how to play the game. And we find out all these things that they did when they were kids that we didn't know, but I actually knew a lot because my husband's sort of one of those guys where he goes to bed and he just doesn't wake up. And I'm sitting there knowing that either one of them was out or both of them were out, you know, in middle school, you know.
Yeah.
And so it was just really hard. And I mean, my husband and I are not stupid. Like, we both were hellions probably as kids. I know that I snuck out. I did things that I wasn't supposed to be doing. I got in trouble though. So the difference between some of the things that happened with my stepkids, if I were caught when I was a kid, oh boy, my parents, there is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You are grounded. My mom and dad were very, very cohesive when it came to discipline. And, you know, and so they knew exactly what buttons to push with me if I did something like that. So I remember the first time I got caught sneaking out. The first and only time, Jennifer, just to be clear,
okay,
the consequences were severe enough, and they never abused us, but I was grounded. I was not allowed to go see my brother in Phoenix. I had to cancel my trip and all this stuff. So I never snuck out again. These kids are very different. And it's a lot like the kids are today. Like, I was a teacher for 20 years. Some of the kids out there are just like,
yes.
How are you getting away with this stuff? Because I would never be able to.
It's interesting because I had primary custody of my kids, but when they went to their dads, my son, one of my boys once in high school said, it's so much easier to be at his house. And I was like, why is it so much easier to be at his house? And he's like, he doesn't check our grades. He doesn't ask about homework. He doesn't sit down and talk about our day. And he doesn't catch us doing things wrong. He's like, you are so aware and involved that it's very difficult to get away with anything. And we sneak out our bedroom window and jump off the lower roof at his, like, he has no idea. And I was like, oh, I'll be the harder parent any day of the week because I'm so involved that I'm cluing in that something's going on. So, but I just don't, I think parents sometimes, not to necessarily defend them, but you're working a lot, you're stressed, your bills keep going up and up and up, you know, things are harder. And if kids aren't needing that direct attention because they're in trouble, we don't tend to give it to them as much. You know, I mean, it's just easy. I want you to tell me about 20 years of teaching because this is so fascinating to me. The woman who doesn't want to have kids of her own, you love being a stepmom and you were a teacher for 20 years. So talk to me about that.
I know, weird, right?
Well, did it fortify your reasons for not wanting to have kids of your own? Was it like, yes, I definitely don't. I see them all day.
I was not, you know, I mean, I went through so many people, you know, telling me that I'm a woman. That's something I need to do. I literally lied to someone in a group of students that I was in a group with studying. I lied to him outright about something that happened to me in high school because he was coming down on me in the group telling me that, what do you mean you're not going to have kids? You know, I mean, you're a woman. And he was like 27 years old and I was probably 30, 31, maybe. And I lied to him and told him that something happened to me in high school that I was damaged and could not have kids. That's how fed up I was with people saying things that they had no right to say to me. And I was working on my teaching degree at that time. And he was so floored and he was so upset that he's like, I am so sorry that I even said that. And he says, I didn't realize that happened. And I said, well, here's the thing. It didn't, but you have no idea who you're talking to at any given time when you're telling somebody something like that. And he's like, you're right. I am so sorry. And he probably never did that. I ran into him a couple years later. But I was working on my teaching degree and I loved working with kids. And one of the reasons is because I saw a lot of me in them at middle school and high school. And so I felt like I was making a difference. Like I really resonated with students in middle school, especially because those were my really, really tough, informative years. You know, that's when I started my period. That's when I was vying for the attention of the popular kids. I wanted to have the perfect pair of pants that they were wearing those days, you know? And so I understood the emotional roller coaster that these kids were going through, especially the girls. And so, you know, I mean, I thoroughly loved teaching, thoroughly. And I'm still in touch with a lot of those kids to this day.
I love that. I mean, I don't think you have to be a parent to be a good teacher. I think sometimes the opposite can be true. You surrounded yourself by kids for a long time. I know you're super active, the most on Instagram. And I loved when I met you and I asked you, like, who are you and what do you do? And why are you here at this tabling event with me? And let's be best friends. You shared your story with me. I think this is a good time to jump into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I ended my teaching career of 20 years. I did 20 years. My husband and I were able to make it happen that I could retire 1 year after he retired. And I was busier than all get out. I had a podcast called Be That Teacher. I was building a coaching business called Be That Teacher and Coach to Engage, actually. And I was going to, in my retirement, support, coach, whatever, new teachers and struggling teachers. I loved podcasting. I have 11 episodes. And when I was coming into home base to, you know, retire June of 2022, I found out I had breast cancer 1 week after my big party. And I had a huge retirement party at my house. And it was on June 4th. And a few days later, I had a mammogram. And by that Saturday after, I found out exactly 1 week after the party that I had stage 2 breast cancer. And so my whole entire retirement that I thought was going to be totally changed. Like, I had all these plans. So all of my podcasting and my coaching business fell to the wayside. And I realized I had to take the following year and really deal with this breast cancer. I went through treatment. I went through chemo. I went through a double mastectomy and reconstruction. I had the deep flap surgery in New Orleans where they take the tissue from.
And create new breasts. And at that time, a year ago, December, I was deemed cancer-free. They got it all.
December 2022?
December 2022.
That's like 6 months, right?
December 20th of 2022. Yes. December 20th of 2022 is when I found out for sure that I was cancer-free.
Wow.
And then about 2 months down the road, I realized that I was recovering and I was really, really depressed. I went through a weird time period where I was not connecting with my husband. And to be clear, he was an incredible caregiver. He went with me to all of my appointments. He went, you know, did everything. And I was not feeling fulfilled in my life. I was like, okay, I had a million things going on before breast cancer. And now I have nothing. Like, I have no purpose. I have no significance. And I couldn't figure that out at the time. So I had been going to therapy and he and I were not connecting. And we ended up starting to go to therapy ourselves. And we've done that throughout the years. And we do really well with that. And we're still in therapy together because when you get breast cancer or any cancer for that matter, after you're cancer free, it's not just like, let's go back to normal and everything's great. There are a lot of things in survivorship that people don't understand what we go through. And so going to therapy with him and continuing that has really, really enhanced our marriage. So I wanted to do something. I was like, I need to do something. I can't just be this little wifey that got breast cancer. And now I'm just like retired and I don't have any job. I don't have anything. So I started a podcast. I started Test Those Breasts, and that was named by my husband because I wanted to make sure that everybody knew as much as they could before they ever even get breast cancer, because there were so many things I didn't know, but there were a lot of things I did, but then tons that I didn't know. So I'm on a mission personally to help women who have never even been diagnosed Maybe they've never even had a mammogram. And I want them to be armed with a lot of knowledge before they ever get breast cancer, because we know that 1 in 8 women get breast cancer. That's the statistics in the United States. And I think it's 1 in 7 in the UK. So that's who I like to reach. And then again, newly diagnosed breast cancer patients. So I have 42 episodes. I am starting a nonprofit. I'm in the process of trademarking my logo and my name. I have a lot of ideas that are going on in my head that I want to, you know, what direction I want to take with this. And I don't sell anything. I'm just looking for listenership at this point in time. So with my nonprofit, I do want to take those funds and I want to create scholarships for people who have been diagnosed. I want to be able to help fund, you know, other nonprofits if possible. You know, just I have a lot of different ideas of what I want to do.
I got my first mammogram when I was 31 or 32 because I had breast augmentation, but I had an aunt who had breast cancer, and it's just close enough that they keep track of you. And I have this.
Women's Health Connection Number.
So okay. This gives me a free mammogram once a year.
Nice.
Yeah, I've had, and you know what, about 15 years ago, because I've had them, I'm 53, so I've had them for over 20 years, but about 15 years ago, they found 2 lumps in my left breast, which is the most terrifying phone call ever. And my doctor sent me in immediately for an ultrasound, and I had the best ultrasound doctor, the radiologist, you know, because usually you go in and you do the ultrasound, that's the next step. And then you wait 3 days to hear from your doctor who got the radiology report and you're panicked. The radiologist walked into the room right after my ultrasound was done. And he said, I want to talk to you about this right now, because I don't want women to leave here and spend 3 days wondering. And he told me, I don't know what it is, but it doesn't look like cancer. And I'm fine checking it every 6 months for the next 2 years. And if anything changes, we definitely have to biopsy or remove it, unless it makes you really uncomfortable that it's there. He said some women, if they know something's there, they just have to, they want it out no matter what. Mm-hmm. And I said, nope, I'm not worried about it if you're not worried about it. And I did my every 6 months for 2 years, and it never changed size, and it's just a normal part of my mammogram now. But that interim time of getting back a mammogram that's not perfect, and waiting to go into ultrasound, and then even just like an ultrasound is so innocuous. There's nothing scary. There's lube and a lady, and she's got the wand. You know, I mean, like there's no pinching or shots or. But it was terrifying. It's terrifying. So,
it is.
I made sure I figured out a way, because I don't have my own medical insurance. It got really expensive, so we stopped. So I found a program that I could still get a mammogram through every single year, because it's such a priority. And even though I've been clear for like 13 years now, every single year I want to know that it's clear. So,
right.
I mean, you had to have been shocked when you got that news.
Yeah, yes and no. Okay. It was interesting, because in the past 10 years, so I've gotten mammograms for quite some time, all through my 40s. I was told early on, well, I don't know how early on, I was told pretty quickly though, that I had dense breast tissue, and a lot of women do. And that I needed to get this diagnostics mammogram. I always ask for the ultrasound as well. And there was a point in time when somebody said to me, well, why do you want that? And I said, well, because I have dense breast tissue and I want to be as clear as possible. And the reason is because I've had 2 lumpectomies in the past that were benign, but nevertheless, it was scary. It was really scary, because even with that, I had to wait like a week to even find out anything. And that was really scary.
When I was told, I was definitely surprised because I was at my healthiest ever at that time. And I had just lost like 33 pounds, really, really healthy. I've always been pretty healthy. But, and people were saying to me, oh my God, Jamie, you were so healthy. Wow, what happened or something? And it really confused me because it turns out that healthy people can get breast cancer.
Yep.
But until you get something like that, it's almost like we have this thing in the back of our mind where it's like cancer is something that happens to other people. Uh-huh. You know, you watch it, you have friends who've had it, people you know, whatever. And then when you get it, it's like, it's shocking. But at the same time, part of me was like, here it is. Because part of me thought to myself, I'm probably going to get breast cancer someday. And that mainly came out of something that one of my friends told me. She had breast cancer and her doctor told her, it's not a matter of if you're going to get breast cancer, it's when. If you live long enough, it's when you're going to get it. Because if we think about it, 1 in 8 women, that is insane. And younger women are getting it more and more now. And it's crazy. And so we're trying to make sure that they are able to get in and get their mammograms and understand what their breast health is like. And so part of me was like, well, here it is. The timing could have been a little bit better, you know? So I guess I was.
And then at the same time, I was not so shocked. But then I went through all the emotions. I was really pissed off. I was really angry because I had just retired. And I'm like, what is this? You know, I was so excited to, you know, do all the things right away. And I couldn't. So, yeah.
You chose to have a double mastectomy. Was that preventatively you did that?
Yes. That part is, yeah. So I went into my surgeon after my chemo, and she said I needed to definitely have a mastectomy on the left side. And I asked her if I should do it on the right. And she says, I don't see why there's any reason you should get rid of a perfectly good breast. And I made the decision. I didn't end up going to her because the kind of surgery that I ended up having, they don't do here in our area. Okay. So, they don't have any special, you know, like they don't have any, plastic microsurgeons that know how to, that do hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of deep flap surgeries. And that's who you really want to go to when you get that kind of surgery. So I ended up going to the Center for Restorative Breast Surgery in New Orleans and made the decision to do both. And that part was preventative. Yes.
What was it like? Had you ever had any type of augmentation or anything like that prior? Okay, so this was like huge. I've seen breasts like my aunt had one. She had one mastectomy and reconstructive, and they actually had to reconstruct the other one because they didn't match anymore. One was like higher up and firmer, and so they actually like reduced and changed her other breast so that they were a little bit more even. It was beautiful though. I mean, they did such a good job. So, you know, there's my aunt like, here are my boobs, taking her shirt off. And I you know, my aunts and I, there were probably 4 of us, and I'm actually the oldest grandchild and my mom's oldest. So I was close enough in age with them. I'm like, I gotta feel them. Like there's no way to not feel your boobs. We need to feel them because it's just so curious that she went through all that and shared the experience and how terrifying. So you did both. So they were even. What was that process like? Did they do the mastectomy first and then reconstruct? Okay. So you went through 2. So tell me about that.
It was in the same surgery. So
it was in the same surgery. Okay.
Double mastectomy, immediate deep flap. Yep.
Got it. Okay. So you woke up with just different breasts.
Yep.
Yeah.
I did.
Okay.
And my surgeon, Dr. Cabling, who I interviewed, I interview a lot of surgeons and oncologists and radiologists and therapists and stuff, but these surgeons are who I'm trying to seek out where they yeah. are, where the really good ones are in our country, who are also microsurgeons. And so that way, you know, people have an understanding depending on where they live. If they don't have something like that in their area, they'll know where to travel to go to the whoever, right? And to yeah. see whether what insurance, you know, what if they take their insurance and whatnot. So Dr. Cabling and Dr. Wright was my, the gal, who, the surgeon who did my mastectomy. And then Dr. Cabling did the reconstruction. And it depends on your situation, how many phases you have of the surgery. So I had two, mine was very cut and dry. You know, they just did the mastectomy and reconstruction. And then I ended up doing phase two just this past December. And that's just the part where they go in, assess the situation, lift, move, do whatever needs to be done to make them better. Right. Mm-hmm. But I will say that phase one, he did an awfully good job. So yeah, it was and Center for Restorative Breast Surgery is all about holistic care. You know, you're in there for that first surgery, you're in there for 3 days, three nights, or, you know, and then I was in there for one night. Here, when you do surgery at any other places, like if you do a mastectomy and reconstruction with like implants or whatever,
yeah,
it's outpatient. I don't even know how, why is it outpatient? It's outpatient. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And I don't think that sometimes, well, first of all, insurance companies don't have any empathy whatsoever. So they don't know and they don't care. They just, you know, so some places don't allow for that because of insurance, but we have to understand that when someone has breast cancer, it's very emotional, and we need to understand that they need the help. We need the holistic care as well. And part of that holistic care has everything to do with being taken care of after your surgery, how you're being taken care of. And Center for Restorative Breast Surgery is very good with holistic care. So that's why I chose to go there. And I just happened to have about three friends who told me about it, about that kind of surgery before I went down the implant road. And I mean, I have literally no issue with implants for other people. But my point of the whole thing is that people should have options.
Yeah.
There are some people who don't want implants. Some people who are totally fine with implants. Some people who get implants and go get explanted at the center and get their tissue put in instead. And so just because maybe they've had issues, whether it be, I don't know, implant illness or just, or,
you know, and not everybody experiences that. So, yeah. So I just, for me, it was what was best for my body.
So you and did the tissue.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Amazing. Do you have nipples?
I do not. Very good question.
Thanks.
I do not. My cancer made it past the ducts. And so they ended up taking the nipples, and there's this really cool thing that we're going to do. I interviewed a couple of gals, Crystal and Courtney, and they own a medical facility that is called Perky, and they are both nurses, and they do 3D nipple tattoos.
Yep.
And if anybody has never, if there's anyone who has never seen that, Google it, 3D nipple tattoos. And it is
amazing.
Apparently a game changer. Yeah. So I suggested with some of my sisters, which you meet a lot of people, it's the sisterhood of all sisterhoods. So I know a lot of people that I've known for at least a year, if not more, and some of them I've never even met before. We are making a girls trip out of it. And we are going to San Antonio in July, and we are getting our nipple tattoos together. So.
That's the best. You know, some women who decide to not augment at all, who get these beautiful chest tattoos, you know, these breast tattoos over their scar tissue of flowers or what, I mean, there's no, you're right that you need to have options, because there are so many ways to do it that I don't know what direction I would want to go, because I haven't been faced with that decision. Right. But there's options at least out there.
Right. And that's a really, really awesome point that you just made. That's my whole point, is that it's really good to understand options for treatments and surgeries before you ever even get it. So this, even if you've never gotten it, it is not totally out of line for us to ask for people to start researching. And that being right. said, in my show notes and on the website that, and also a surgeon that I interviewed, Dr. Manas Crisopolo, who is a plastic microsurgeon at PRMA in San Antonio, created an app called the Breast Advocate app. And I did not learn about that until after my breast surgery, after I was cancer free. And I said, I really wish I would have known about this app, because I could have been doing research on different options leading up to the surgery instead of having to make a very last minute decision because I didn't know. And right. so it's really important for people to understand that being prepared for that dreaded day, even if it never happens, that would be amazing. But being prepared for that day is super important. And that is why I'm so dedicated to educating people using professional surgeons and other providers and other survivors mm-hmm. on my podcast to be able to help people.
I have a couple follow-up questions. Did you do chemo or radiation?
I did chemo. I didn't end up having to do radiation because after my surgery, during my surgery, they had taken some lymph nodes, tested them. I was cancer-free. So I did not end up having to do radiation, but I did 5 of the 6 rounds of chemo. And the reason only 5 is because they had to stop me because I developed a really rare anemia that came out of another tumor that they discovered when they discovered the breast cancer, and it was benign and encapsulated, but nevertheless, it was putting off antibodies that were attacking my red blood cells. So I am now currently dealing with that, and I'm on this medication for that. But I lost my hair. I went through all of the skin.
Everything.
But yeah.
Yeah. You went to therapy with your husband, which I'm so glad that you talked about how that helped you when you were step parents moving through having the kids and raising them, and that was a modality that worked really well for you. I think people need to find, again, options, but the modality that helps them work through the tougher times or the places where they don't mesh or where they feel disconnected. So I appreciate you saying that. And then you went again. How did it change your sex life? How did it change your body image, your own personal body image? What was the dynamic with that?
Well, first of all, before I got breast cancer, my husband and I think I might've been going through menopause because, and they do say that breast cancer pushes you into menopause. I really do believe that that's what was happening and I know looking back and then going to a new gynecologist after I was cancer free, I let her know that right before I found out my husband, I was having terrible pain, during sex. Right. And my husband and I are very, very well connected. Like we have always been very well connected, have mm-hmm. had an amazing sex life. And, when I went to her, I told her what happened, and she was telling me that there are certain things that happen with women as they get older. And so she put me on this regimen thing that ended up helping. I was really scared before my breast surgery because I was so afraid that I mourned my breasts. I have always been in love with my breasts, and my husband loved my breasts. So it was an amputation, and that's what I needed to, that's what was going on in my head. So I was really afraid that I wasn't going to find my sexuality again.
Yep.
And the fact is that it turned out to be just opposite. Going to a therapist. So 60% of women or 60% of couples go through divorce with a breast cancer diagnosis. And I don't know if that is true with all cancer. I'm not sure, but I do know that 60% of couples end up, and I've interviewed women on my podcast who did go through a divorce because of the breast cancer or whatever. You know, I don't know whether there wasn't a connection before and then that just threw a whole monkey wrench into it to make it worse. But there are just some people who cannot handle it. It's just, you know, And if you're not willing to do the work, then it's going to be even harder. And my husband and I are willing to do the work. And so it enhanced our, we have a fiery relationship. We have, you know, it's just so who we've always been. But it's very much helped, and here we are, and it's not perfect, but we keep going and we keep talking about it. We keep talking about the elephant in the room. We, you know, things like that. So I highly encourage people to go to therapy.
You mourned it like an amputation, which it is. I mean, that's pretty much what it is.
It is.
What transitioned you to feeling better about your body?
Well, the amazing job that Dr. Kapling did, because when you're getting deep flap surgery, it's kind of a little bit of a body, a mommy makeover, what Dr. C would say, but it's a little bit of a,
you know, from your abdomen, and then they make your abdomen look really good. Or there's other options where they can take it from your rear end or wherever it is that they can get that tissue. And then they can, and because they are a plastic and microsurgeon, they are able to sort of sculpt you in a way. And I don't feel like I look totally different. Mm-hmm. I just feel good in my skin. And my husband is very, very, he's very touchy and complimentary. He loved my bald head, for gosh sakes. So he never made me feel any other way other than absolutely beautiful, even when I felt terrible about myself, you know? So he just loves my body, and which I know it's not just about our man who we're with or our partner that we're with, right? It's, you have to feel good about yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that part of the reason is because I talk about it and very open about it. I tell the good, the bad, the ugly. I talk about it with other survivors. I am on a pod. We talk about it on the podcast. And I think that gives hope to people who feel that they are going to lose that sexuality or lose their love for their body. And I'm okay in my head because of what I have done along the way to get through what I went through and still going through, but it's part of my therapy. Podcasting is part of my therapy. Yeah. Honestly, I started it as a healing mechanism, and it's working. And I've been doing it it'll be a year in June that I launched.
I love that you had done it before and it was something that you wanted to do. And you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to do this differently. Cause you had started the teacher's podcast, right? And it is cathartic to talk to people through situations. Jamie, I'm first of all, so grateful to know you and so absolutely just beyond proud of you. And I really appreciate that you came on. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate you having me on too. And anytime, I love to talk about this stuff. Thank you for what you do.
Thanks.